son Daniel. He actually told me to express that because he wasn't feeling very well last few days. And he said that he really appreciates the young people here. Got to know some of them here in this church. But I'd like to start this morning by reading to you from a passage of scripture. I think you guys have my PowerPoint, right? That is a classic. A classic to some of you. For others, you're just starting to discover that. I have as you know, I have a very young child, a toddler. He's 1.5 years old. And he is starting to get into Dr. Seuss. Let me read to you a classic from Dr. Seuss. Now, by the way, I don't know why he's called Dr. Seuss. If anybody knows, tell me, let me know why. Okay, I don't think he's a real doctor. Anyways, Dr. Seuss wrote this. I am Sam, Sam I am, that Sam I am, that Sam I am. I do not like that Sam I am. This is one other guy saying it. He doesn't like Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? That's what Sam I am says, right? I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there? I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am. Does anybody remember that story? Or am I the only dinosaur here? Okay. Some of you have children that are this age, right? You're starting to get into that, right? It's a classic. It's one of Dr. Seuss's greatest works. It's from Green Eggs and Ham. And you know the story. Sam keeps trying to get his friend to try green eggs and ham. Would you like to eat them in a box, he says. Would you like to eat them with a fox? And at every rejection, he tries something new, right? And his friend keeps on saying, no, 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 I don't like them. Until finally, it would seem that Sam has tried everything because his friend says this, I could not, would not, on a boat, I will not, with a goat, I will not eat them in the rain, I will not eat them on a train, not in the dark, not in a tree, not in a car, you let me be. He says, I do not like them in a box, I do not like them with a fox, I will not eat them in a house, I do not like them with a mouse, I do not like them here or there, I do not like them anywhere, I do not like green eggs and ham, I do not like them, Sam I am, right? It's pretty definite, I'd say, right? You think that Sam would get the hint, but no, he's not one, he's going to try one more thing. He says this, you do not like them, so you say, try them, and you may. Try them, and you may, I say. And does it work? Let's continue. Let's listen in. The guy says, Sam, if you let me be, I will try them. You will see. And he takes a bite. Ta-da! Say, I'd like green eggs and ham. I do. I like them, Sam, I am. And I would eat them in a boat. And I would eat them with a goat. And I will eat them in the rain. And in the dark, and on a train, and in a car, and in a tree, they are so good, you see. So I will eat them in a box, he says. I will eat them with a fox, and I'll eat them in a house. I'll eat them with a mouse, and I'll eat them here and there. Say, I will eat them anywhere. I do so like green eggs and ham. Thank you, Sam, I am. Now, just as a side note, my sons and I, we went to Disney World in Florida, right, Disneyland World, and we tried, there's a Dr. Seuss land, and there's a little cafe there. I should have shown the picture. It's the green eggs and ham breakfast sort of cafe, and we tried them, and I don't know why, they were cold. I really hated them, okay? I really hated these green eggs and ham. I was a little bit grossed out by them. But anyways, this guy finally tries green eggs and ham, and you think that would have been, see, for the most people, this is a story about persistence, right? For most people, you would have been content to give up after the first, I do not like them. I don't like you, Sam, I am. I think for most people in our society, in fact, I would dare say, and I'm being a little, I can say this as a Chinese, as a risky, you know, it's a little bit racist, but Chinese people are very timid when it comes to sharing their faith sometimes. And it's very easy for us to just be to try to share the gospel and somehow step back, particularly if there's a strong reaction, right? If there's a strong reaction, the first thing we want to do is step back. But look at what happened here. This guy, out of persistence, had something to share. And he had the most important, to him, it was so important. It was try green eggs and ham. You know, I know more Chinese people that are more interested in sharing about a great sale than they are about the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, let's be honest, okay? Right? Cyber Monday, Black Friday, there's some great deals online, or there's a great deal at the supermarket, right? Lobster for less than half price. Or you go to a restaurant and wow, the dim sum there is so amazing. Or you go to you have children that are take this amazing after school program that's jumped them 6 grades ahead, right? Or you've got this great deal on this new car or this new smartphone, right? You know it's only special deals for only certain people that have signed up for it, right? And sometimes you have relatives and you just got to. People that you love, you just have to share it with them, don't you? Right? You just have to share these deals with them, or else you hear it buzz through the community. But when it comes to the most important message, it's really easy for us, as soon as we get a little bit of backup, a little bit of pushback, to give up. Not like this Sam I Am guy, right? I want to talk about that today. I want to look at a passage in Scripture that was read to us earlier. And I want to ask ourselves some questions about sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is Missions Month. And for some people, they've gone through so many Missions Months, it's actually like it's like Christmas for them, or like a different, all these different big holidays. They've been through that, and they said, okay, this is another Missions Month, another week of, month of evangelism. Let's get this over with kind of thing. This is one of my favorite times of the year. This is one of the times of the year that I think we get back to the roots of who we are as Christians. We get back to sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ, the most important message in the world, right? You know, if we don't, and I, before I get into this passage, I want to point out to you that it has to do with passion, it has to do with your heart for the gospel. I have a friend who right now he's unemployed, but he's looking for a job at Honda or working for them because he loves Honda cars. He's just passionate about Honda cars, okay? But Acura and things like that, right? And he knows everything about the different kinds of cars. He's an evangelist for Honda, in a sense. I think he'll get a job at Honda, okay? All right. For you and I want to encourage those of you here today that have gone through many, seen many Christmases, many New Years, many birthdays. Some of us have lost our passion for the most important message in the world. Others are learning right now, and you're younger Christians. I want today to share with you a little bit more about how to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, to equip you a little bit. Afterwards, I'll be with the young people and with the young adults and some of the adults. I'm going to give you some more tools. But the passage I want to talk to you about today has three principles that I want to explore that I think are important because it gives us a fullness on how to properly and maturely share the gospel of Jesus Christ. There are three P words that help you remember what I'm talking about. The first P word, now the passage has already been read to us. I think in the PowerPoint I put on the passage. I won't read it all over again. It was read to us very, very competently earlier. But I will go on to share the first P word, and that's the word paradox. Because in this passage it's told that Christians are free of all but subject to none, but Christians are also servants of all and subject to all. Now, it's a dense passage, okay? So I want to unpack it a little bit for you, and hopefully it'll make it a little more clear. I hope I'm not going to muddy the waters anymore. But let me read to you what Martin Luther, the great reformer from the 1520, he wrote this in a paper called Freedom of the Christian. He began with this paradox. He said this: a Christian is a perfectly free lord of all, subject to none, because of the freedom that comes to the gospel of Jesus Christ. A Christian, however, is also a perfectly dutiful servant of all, subject to all. And then he explained it this way. He said this: these two ideas or principles seem to contradict each other, but both are Paul's own statements, for it says in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19, "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all." And then in Romans chapter 13, verse 8, Paul also writes, "Owe no one anything except to love one another." So that's a paradox, and that's introduced in this passage. But even, let me get into it a little bit later. Actually, I'll clarify more to you what the implications for that are in our lives. But there's another P word here I want to quickly get to, and that's the word purpose. The word purpose. What is Paul's aim in this passage? Why has he made himself a slave to all? Why is he becoming like a Jew to the Jews? Why did he make himself like one not having not having the law, to those not having the law, and weak to the weak, which is the same as saying, why should we do the same thing, right? First, he says, it's to win others. Five times he says, in verse 19, and verse 20, verse 21, verse 22, etc., he says he wants to win others to Christ, right? So he does this in order to win others. And then he says, to save others. At the end of verse 22, his summary statement is this: I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. So it's a slightly different aim. Five times he says to win them, and now he says to save them, right? To win them what? Over to the gospel of Jesus Christ. But one of the important parts of winning someone is to save them from eternal damnation, from a lifetime of regret. And finally, he says, it is to share in the benefits of the gospel in verse 23. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I might share in its blessings. Let's think about this a little bit. R.H. Lenski says it this way. Paul is saying, if I omit this concern of love for others, although through my work devoid of such love, many others may be saved, yet I myself would not be saved. So he's saying it this way. He's saying that in our sharing of the gospel, it has to be authentic. And it's authentic because we experience it ourselves, right? It's something that we ourselves, like my friend that loves Hondas, we experience so we can share it. And all of you know of those type of people. You know that, you know, someone once told me that there's one guaranteed way to never be poor in this life. Now, that kind of perked my interest. And this person, who is quite wealthy, said, if you're a good salesman, if you can sell in the business world, you're guaranteed to do well. If you can sell insurance, if you can sell cars, if you can sell houses, if you can sell software, if you can sell whatever, you're going to be good at it. You're going to do well in the business world. Now, this is what I want to tell you. In order to sell, you've got to love your product. You've got to believe in your product, right? You've got to really, really believe in your product. And all of us know good salesmen, good saleswomen. There are people that you go into a store, there's one person just hanging around, just trying to buy the time, getting their pay until the end of the shift, and then they'll leave, and they'll sell nothing. And then you go into that same store, and there's another salesperson that really believes in that product, that electronic gadget, that clothing line, that shoe line, that product for children, whatever. And they just love it, and you can tell. And once they try to sell you that product, you get caught up in that product because they believe in it. That's the same with the gospel of Jesus Christ. There are a lot of things that can be said about sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. But I think at the very heart is that we need to let the gospel of Jesus Christ flow into us. We need to let the gospel of Jesus Christ change our lives. We need to let the gospel of Jesus Christ become so important to us that it just naturally flows out. It's a beauty. It's a natural thing that just comes out of you. I'm going to tell you a slightly embarrassing story. Well, my wife is not here, but she's heard this story before, okay? but it was years ago. I remember when I was single, okay? And I was hanging out with a bunch of my friends. I used to work at the IBM laboratories, and I was Don Mills, Eglinton, down there. And I remember we went to a mall nearby, and I I remember I was single, the three single guys, and in their 20s, and I remember we're talking about what kind of women we like, okay? Now, this is not Donald Trump locker room talk, okay? Let me be very clear to you, okay? It was pretty legit, right? They're saying, oh, one guy says, oh, are you into Chinese women? Are you into only Chinese women, blah, blah, blah? Are you into, this other guy was Italian, we're saying, are you into only Italian women? And we're not discussing women. We're talking about we're not like being crude. We're talking about the type of women we like, okay? And I, as a Christian, knowing my friends knew I was a Christian, right? I wanted to have a good testimony to them. So I said that I went the high road, right? They didn't go low, but I went high. I said, I'm looking for intellect. I'm looking for spirituality. I'm looking for faith. Looks, to me, are not that important, right? I was saying that as a 20-year-old guy, 20-something-year-old guy. And then God tested us by sending the most beautiful Chinese woman that I'd seen up to that point just walk right by us. And all three of us kind of turned our heads, kind of instinctively. And then I was convicted right off the bat. And then I had just said it's inner beauty that's more important. And my friend turned to me and said, "You know, Fred, for some women that inner beauty just flows all out all over the place. Can't help it, right?" Well, here's the thing. If you're gonna attract people to the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of Jesus Christ has to be in you and has to flow out of you. It has to overtake you. That beauty of the gospel has to be so much part of you that it just flows all out and people see it. The Bible says out somewhere it's the fragrance of the gospel. People almost smell it in your life. That's evangelism. That's part of it. Okay, let me get, I digressed a little bit, but let me get on. The next P word, there's paradox, right? There's paradox and there's purpose, and now we have plan. The last P. What is Paul's strategy for winning and saving others? The answer is this. His strategy was to use his Christian freedom to become a slave of all. Now, let me pause there. I think that's the next slide. He wants to, in verse 19, he says, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible." So Paul's strategy is love. It's exactly what he said in Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. "You were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love." So you use your liberty to love by serving. And that's what Paul says he's doing here in verse 19. That's what Paul and Jesus mean by love. You can see that even more clearly in the three things that Paul says about his relationship to the law. Now, this part, the next section, we're still in Corinthians. The next section in Corinthians gets a little bit complex, it's a little bit dense, but let me just try to unpack it for you a little bit. He says in verse 20, "To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law." So he says he is not under the law because he has freedom, because he's been in salvation in Jesus Christ. However, in verse 21, "To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law. Though I am now free, I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law." So he's also saying that he's still under the law of God. So he's not without the law of God, but he still has the law of God. Now I don't realize this is getting kind of complex. So first, he is not under the law, but secondly, he is not without the law of God. Hear that? This is both sides. He's not under the law, but he's not without the law of God. And then in verse 21b, Paul says he's under Christ's law. So those are the three statements Paul says in relation to the law. Very important, actually, if you look at Romans. He says this, "I am not under the law, I am not without the law of God, I am under the law of Christ." And you say, okay, that sounds really complex. What does that mean? Well, what that means is this. Christians are the most free people in this world, but Christians are also the most bound people in this world, right? What it means is that we make ourselves slaves to all in order to win people. We are not under the law in terms of judgment, but we're under the law of love, of grace, through Jesus Christ. And in many ways, that's much greater than the law that brings judgment, because it means that we go out of our way in order to win other people. You know, I was listening to Pastor Allen and is it Christine just now, and it occurred to me that here are people that possibly that were born overseas, traveled to another culture, to Canada, and now they're going to another land, Peru, that speak Spanish. And my assumption is that they do not speak Spanish, right? Maybe they learned a little bit of Spanish. Jacob Ginter, by the way, he's a friend of mine. He knows Spanish. He went to Spain for many years. Either in Spain Spanish, not South American Spanish. But anyways, these are people that have gone out of their way to share the gospel of Jesus Christ for very little earthly gain, right? Why do they do all that? Not because they're legally bound to do it, but because they're under the law of grace and love that Jesus Christ has called them to, right? That's an amazing thing. It's incarnational as well. In freedom for love's sake, you try to overcome unnecessary walls that cut you off from unbelievers, right? We don't build walls, we build bridges. That's what the Pope said, right, in response to Trump. right? In freedom for love's sake, you become like a young person in order to reach young people. Freedom for love's sake, you learn another language and translate the Bible. In freedom for love's sake, you eat dinner together in a way that they eat dinner. You try food that's not necessarily something that you would normally eat. I went to Lima years ago, and by the way, they have something called ceviche there, which is like a raw fish. Oh, that's good. It's really good. It's really good. But as a missionary, we also went to the poorer areas. I remember going with my friend Jordan to visit a young woman who lived on the mountainside and with very, very poor. And, you know, in Brazil, they call them favelas. I'm not sure I forget what they call them in Peru. But there was a young mother that our team went to visit. She was only probably about 18 years old, and she had like three children. And she had another one coming. And she told me that to go to the bathroom, her and her children had to walk like over a block to share a bathroom with probably over 100 people, right? I think her children only had baths like once every like 3 or 4 weeks or once a month, right? I give our son a bath every day, right? It's incredible. But in living, in visiting them, she went out of her way to make tea for us, and she brought out some food. It was revulsive. It was hard for us to eat the food and to drink the tea, knowing where it came from. But we did it with joy because of the fact it was in our freedom for love's sake that we did these things, right? Missions is not easy. Missions is not easy, but it's worth it. Jesus came to earth as a man in incarnational love. We are to do the same thing incarnationally, to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? Groups such as the Salvation Army, Christian charity organizations are strong in needs-oriented evangelism. We ourselves need to keep in mind that it is for the sake of the gospel we are to be all things to all men in order to win some. The question I ask you today is that, are you spending time with unbelievers in your sphere of influence in your life in a way that would be spiritually enhancing to them and drawing them closer to Jesus Christ? Or are they influencing you to become more worldly minded? Right? Is your passion for winning your friends and family growing, or is it shrinking? Or is it easy? It's easy for us as Christians to just be in our own little enclave, to retreat back, to prevent the world from influencing us, but we are to be salt and light. And salt only works when it's rubbed into something, right? In Matthew chapter 3, verses 13 to 16, we are told that we are to be salt of the earth. We are Jesus' marketing strategy. Jesus' marketing strategy is us. As salt, we are preservatives. We make people thirsty. And we are to bring people to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Light exposes, illuminates, and attracts. You know, at nighttime in the summer, you put on a light. All the bugs come in because they're attracted to it. Right? But I want to quickly share with you something that I learned from Lee Strobel. He's in an evangelism conference at Willow Creek many years ago. He said that there are different kinds of Christians, some that repel and some that attract. I want us today to consider, what kind of Christian are you? Are you an attractive Christian? Those that repel, he calls one kind very quickly, those that are in your face. They shout in bullhorns and placards. They have instructions on how to hook up speakers to cars and drive-by shoutings, right? There's a church in the States, and I think they call themselves a Baptist church, which I don't think they should. I think it's called like Greensboro or something, in which they have an extremely repulsive group of Christians, supposedly Christians, that hate all homosexuals and go to all these military funerals, and they hate all people that don't believe in the King James Bible, for example, right? They're very, very repulsive Christians, right? You know, they're unnatural when they share the gospel, right? You know, you go to a movie theater, you know, you sit next to a person, as somebody, you say to them, is that seat saved? And I heard someone say, no, it's not saved. But then the person will say, but are you saved? Right? It's just unnatural kinds of sharing testimony. Those people are repulsive. How about those who are holier than thou? Us versus them mentality. I remember years ago, someone told me about an episode of The Simpsons. I never watched it, but someone told me in an episode of The Simpsons, there's Maude Flanders, and The Simpsons are talking to her, and she says that she just came back from a Bible camp, at her, for her church. She said, "I've just come back from a Christian camp learning how to be more judgmental." Right? That's repulsive. There are also cosmetic Christians, skin-deep Christians. They're hypocrites. You know, in a Gallup poll, it said that only 13% of American Christians have a faith that runs deep enough to affect their fundamental character and values. What about in Canada? I don't know what the statistic is. It might be very similar. But on the other side of the coin, and these are the people I want to celebrate today, I want to encourage you. You're attractive Christians that draw people to the naturally to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Those are people who are consistent. My Brampton Sunday school teacher, for 13 years at least, never missed a Sunday teaching at Sunday school except for when his mother died. His name is Don Taylor, the most consistent Christian that I know. We used to call him the walking concordance because he knew his Bible so well, right? Consistent, compassionate, and caring Christians. Right? After the death of my brother Andrew, there were so many Christians from the church we were at, the Toronto Chinese Community Church, that spent time helping us when we were in tears and were broken and in grief. These are the people that came in when we were completely destroyed. And I remember them baking for us, you know, driving us home, doing all sorts of things for us. Compassionate and caring Christians. And finally, there are courageous and costly Christians. People that are willing to lose their lives for the sake of the gospel. Not just one-time martyrdom, but I'm talking little losses all throughout their lives. Giving up their lives for the sake of the gospel. Those are courageous and costly Christians. We don't experience that kind of persecution here. But go overseas to one of the many, many lands that have leadership that are opposed to Christians, and you will see right away that there are costly and courageous Christians there. Now, I want to share with you two quick illustrations just to close. And the first is this. There was a movie years ago called The Perfect Storm. And in that movie, it described the dangers of the fishing industry through the eyes of a crew of a fishing boat. It was called the Andrea Gale, right? They had to bring home an excellent catch of fish. So the captain and crew, remember those famous people, right? There's all these famous actors, Brad Pitt, George Clooney, and all that sort of thing. Right? The captain and crew decided that they're going to risk everything and travel as far as the remote but fertile fishing grounds called the Flemish Cap. It's an especially dangerous trek because of unpredictable weather in the month of October. So they go past Massachusetts, and they encounter what's called a perfect storm in 1991. And they're never heard from again. Right? It actually, it was quite a dramatic movie, right? And I saw that movie, and it was quite dramatic. But the whole point is that the author who wrote that book upon which the movie was made, a guy named Sebastian Younger, he wrote this. You know, he says, there are many kinds of work that are dangerous, but one of the most interesting things about fishing is that it really hasn't changed much over time. It's been mechanized, of course. But the basic reality of going to sea for months at a stretch is the same as it was about 100 years ago. He says, you're way beyond help from anyone else. You're on your own. I think that forms a certain kind of character. He says, sailors have a certain kind of character because of that. Not only does everyone know someone who has died at sea, but everyone who works in the fishing industry has almost died. Every single fisherman you talk to has almost gotten nailed at one time or other. And then he says this, it just takes courage to be a fisherman. Right? There's reality TV shows that talk about that. I haven't watched these shows. I don't watch a lot of reality shows. But there's this show apparently that talks about North Sea fishing or fishing in the Arctic. There's always an element of danger in fishing. You know, it takes courage to fish for the souls of men. It takes sacrifice. And that's never going to change because this world is not going to change. Okay? In some places, it's easier than in other places. But it always takes some courage. But it's worth it. The final story I want to share with you is about a movie, a Chinese movie, that some of you might have seen. It was kind of famous for a while. It's called The Message. I don't know if you've ever watched it. It was a Cantonese movie. But it was a story of spies, espionage during World War II in northern China. At that time was under the influence of the Japanese. You remember that, right, during World War II? The Chinese government relied on the messages sent by undercover spies to stop many attacks from Japan. And this story is about two spies working for the Chinese government who were nearly exposed because of the trap set by Japanese officials. One of the aggressive young Japanese officers was trying to expose them to get rid of them, these spies. So what he did is that he took five suspects and he held them hostage in a mansion in order to flush out the true spy hiding in their department. His trick was to break them up one by one through severe torture and interrogation. And among these five, there were two girls, and they were experts in breaking and reading Morse code. And one of the girls found out later that the other girl, her best friend, she didn't realize it, happened to be one of the spies. The innocent girl talked with her best friend and asked her why she risked her life to send out the messages. And this is what her friend said. She said, "Yes, my life is dedicated to sending out messages that will affect the lives of others. Because to her, that was the most important thing in this world. Because even in their imprisonment, they were able to send out messages to the Chinese government through songs, through cigarettes, through tapping, through body language, through other methods. In fact, what happened in the end, the spy was killed and her body was taken away by coroners. But messages were still sent to the Chinese government through her dead body because Morse code was embedded in some of her clothing. She put it in some of her clothing. Even upon her death, she sent out messages to her government. When the war was over, her friend read the messages sent by the spy that had passed away, stitched it into her dress, right? And this is what the message said. Being a messenger is my choice. I will dedicate my entire life to it. I am not afraid of dying. Our enemy will not understand. It's a belief." You know, that inspires me. That inspires me because I ask myself, as a follower of Jesus Christ, am I a good messenger of the gospel, of the good news? Am I living the message? Do I care and cherish others' lives? Am I convicted that God will punish those who do not know him and do not obey the gospel of Jesus Christ? They will be punished with everlasting destruction and shut out from the presence of the Lord. By the way, I do believe in eternal hell. I know some Christians or some people that do not. I do believe in eternal hell. And I think that is one of the most terrifying realities that does spur on the gospel. But I do believe even more in eternal heaven. And I believe that that is one of the greatest motivators for us to share the gospel. The message reminds us that Jesus is the greatest messenger who lived on earth to the fullest. He sent out the messages that God is love through speeches, questions and answers, healing, feeding, teaching, crying, touching, praying, living among us as a human. And in his death, he basically lived out the gospel. Do we live out the gospel of Jesus Christ? As a community of faith, are we attractive? Are we consistent? Are we courageous? Do we share in our lives? Does it just flow right out of us? That's what we need to do during Missions Month. Let's pray.